Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome to Better Living, a show about the people and organizations that make an impact in our area. I'm your host, Nick Carissimi. Today's show focuses on the Jordan Elizabeth Harris Foundation. Two representatives are in studio to talk about what this organization does and how you can get involved. Up first is their executive director, Christina Judge. How are you doing today?
Great, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you driving all the way from Fort Worth, correct?
Yes, Fort Worth.
Okay, a previous guest, Brad Nallen, recommended you guys. I always ask for recommendations from guests, so afterwards, I'm going to need one from at least both of you. But he had great things to say about your organization, and you told me off mic that he was part of your board. Is that correct?
Yes, Brad is one of our board members.
And do you work closely with him?
We do. We do. He's very involved. And if you know anything about Brad, he's a marriage and family therapist. So he brings a lot of value to our board.
Well, I do want to discuss what you do for this organization and how you found it. But first, I think we really need to just talk about the organization. Tell me about the Jordan Elizabeth Harris Foundation. What do you guys do?
Well, what we do is we provide suicide prevention training and education for children, teens, and adults. And we have a few different programs. The first program that I want to speak about is our Hope Squad program. And that is a peer-to-peer school-based curriculum. It was founded in Utah 14 years ago, and in a response to a string of suicides in that area, the national director, Greg Hudnall, was a principal of a high school, and he basically came up with the curriculum that they have been using for quite a while in 300 schools in Utah, and we have had it, we're in our third year here of using it in Fort Worth ISD. We also have White Settlement, and we've just implemented with Birdville. So this fall, we have about 25 schools. And what makes a curriculum unique is that instead of a single service delivery where someone comes in and talks to kids about suicide prevention for an hour, this is ongoing, and it's ongoing, and the concept is really very unique in that the students actually represent Hope Squad student leaders. They're elected based on criteria. If the students are, good listeners, they're able, to be confided in. And the same names kind of bubble up to the top because they're nominated by their fellow students. These Hope Squad student leaders become the ears and eyes of the school. They don't become therapists or counselors, but they're taught to look for signs, ask important questions, persuade students to stay with them so that they can get help. The students are, the Hope Squad leaders are supervised by Hope Squad advisors, and those are staff that are embedded in the school, usually counselors, intervention specialists, social workers, and sometimes even teachers. When Ellen and I, we were in Utah, it was interesting. We went to a very small elementary school, and there was actually one of the custodians, Mr. Rusty, was actually one of the Hope Squad advisors because he was very popular and the students felt comfortable with him and they trusted him.
Of all the programs that you could have chose to implement, what spoke to you specifically about this one?
I think the fact that Hope Squad itself is an ongoing curriculum throughout the school year in that it sets up a culture of kindness and caring, inclusivity, anti-bullying, and it also fosters and encourages help-seeking in the school. And that's very important because 7 out of 10 children are usually going to tell somebody if they're struggling with thoughts of suicide, and it's not necessarily an adult. And the thing that I have to say about that, though, is that when we go and we do the parent meetings, a lot of the parents will ask questions. They'll feel concerned that their children that are nominated to Hope Squad might have too much pressure on them, but these children are already being approached, and it would be to the benefit for them to have the skills and tools that they need to be more effective if students are struggling and come to them and talk to them.
What ages are we talking about? Because you said there's 25 schools, correct?
Yes. So curriculum starts as young as fourth grade. In the younger years, of course, it has more to do with, as I said before, kindness and caring, anti-bullying. And as it progresses in the years, it goes all the way up to 12th grade. There's more of a suicide prevention component.
Is this taught in the school as part of a curriculum? Is this an after-school type activity for those that are part of Hope Squad?
It depends. Each school is different. Sometimes they might have it be part of a period. Sometimes it might be an extracurricular thing.
And so how does each school decide what is going to fit their students?
Well, the curriculum itself is pretty flexible, so it just depends on it on the particular school. There's different models. Some schools will elect Hope Squad leaders every year. Some of them will use the same ones from year to year. And that's what's so wonderful about it, is that it's very flexible.
What kind of kids are joining Hope Squad? What do you look for as far as students that want to participate and help others?
If you stop and think of when you were in school, and if you were struggling and there was somebody that you wanted to talk to, you might have a few kids that you can think of. They weren't necessarily the popular kids. They weren't necessarily your best friends. Those are the type of students that are nominated and elected to Hope Squad.
How does this nomination and election happen? I mean, is it the kind of ballot box type thing, or do the students go talk to a teacher and mention this to somebody? Can you know, or if kids are interested, can they just volunteer themselves? How does that work?
Well, it's there's three. From what I know, there's three questions that are asked, and it's something akin to maybe a Survey Monkey, and they'll put the names in, and it seems it's really amazing, but the same names kind of bubble to the top. But the children have to have parental permission to participate in the program.
As you mentioned before, a lot of parents are almost wary of having their kids deal with such, let's say, heavy subject matter. What you're saying is that it's not really the way to look at it. This is a part of their lives already, and you're just giving them the tools to be able to deal with it better and also to help people that may need it.
Exactly, Nick.
And is that one of the things that made you want to implement Hope Squad in this area?
Yes. Absolutely.
So those are the things that you're looking for that really you think make a difference, because a lot of your organization is developed just around education.
Well, and I think one of the things that was a deciding factor in terms of using Hope Squad was the success that it had in Utah, and it continues to have in Utah. And that was a big factor right there as well. Currently, right now, the curriculum is being used in 450 schools in the United States, and there's a handful in Canada. And we have, of course, 25 schools here, and then it looks as though we're probably going to be implementing at least a dozen more in the spring.
That many? So you're all, I mean, that's a significant number. If you've only got 25, you're going to add another 12. Exciting, right?
Right. And last year, the last academic school year, about 12,000 students benefited from having Hope Squad in their schools. And that number should probably double this fall.
That's impressive. So is the organization really working towards pushing this out as much as it can? Has this become a major focus for your organization?
Yes, it has. It has.
All
and
right.
Currently, right now, we're serving Tarrant County. But, you know, in terms of expansion, we're not really sure as to whether or not we'll be able to expand into other counties and when that'll take place.
What do you think about that?
Well, we have 524 public schools in Tarrant County.
So there's a few that you need to get to still.
Yeah.
My guest today is Christina Judge. She's the executive director of the Jordan Elizabeth Harris Foundation. You can find them online at jordanharrisfoundation.org. How long have you been a part of this organization?
I started last October, so I'm getting ready to cycle through my first year.
How does it feel?
It's wonderful. I'm very passionate for the mission.
Okay.
I have a personal story. My daughter lost a friend of hers 3 years ago, almost 3 years. Yeah, 3 years ago this month. He died by suicide. His name is Gabe. And it caused some challenges for my daughter. And luckily, I have a social work background, so I was able to find my daughter help. And so I knew what to do because of my background, and I want to make sure that everybody else has that opportunity to know what to do to help somebody.
You said you worked in social work. Did you work within suicide, the suicide arena? I don't know. I don't know what the proper term is. But is this something that professionally you had experience with beforehand?
Well, this is my first foray into suicide prevention. When I worked for the United States Army, I was a social worker, and I managed social service programs for Army Community Services.
Okay.
Yes. I've been with in child welfare, I've been in healthcare, and I've also been in academia.
You're all over the place. Wow. What did you, so how long were you in the military for?
I worked for the, I was a Department of the Army civilian, so I worked for the Department of the Army for 3 years.
Okay. Did you work with suicide and suicide prevention within the military?
No, mostly mine was financial planning. Okay. I ran an Army Emergency Relief Office. And if you know anything about the military, there's a lot of financial struggles with service members.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yes, that was what you were doing. Now, you've been with the organization for about a year.
Uh-huh.
Was it this personal experience that you had? Is that what drew you to this organization? Had you heard of this organization before?
I did know about it, yes.
Okay.
And when their previous executive director left, I threw my hat into the ring, and I'm very grateful to have this. It's an honor to work for this agency.
Had you ran an organization like this before? That's always a huge jump between being a part of it as, you know, like a social worker or something like that, and then actually being the one running this organization.
This is my first foray into being an executive director.
Is it too much at times? Do you miss the, because I want to say that if you're a social worker or you have that kind of background, you're boots on the ground, and that's kind of where people thrive if they've been a part of that for a long time. And then sometimes when you're in the administrative end, you don't get to do that anymore. Do you miss that, or do you still get to partake?
I think I get to wear a lot of different hats, and I like that because I can take all of my skill sets from previous positions that I've held and put them all together. And it's very busy, very fast-paced. The days go by quickly, but it's very rewarding, and I love it. And I've got a great board and a wonderful team. I've got two other full-time team members. We're small, but we're mighty, and we do a whole lot.
I was just going to ask about how big your staff was, because you're going to nearly double, I'm guessing, within the next year, the amount of schools that you're helping with just one of your programs, and there's only 3 full-time employees?
Yes.
Do you rely a lot on volunteers?
We do. We have another program that we have is the actual QPR, the gatekeeper training.
Okay.
And QPR stands for question, persuade, refer. In the gatekeeper training, I get, you know, the tagline is how to save a life in an hour. So we can give you the skills and the tools that you need to be able to question someone if they're struggling, persuade them to get help, and then refer them mm-hmm. to get help. We have about 10 certified volunteers who can go out into the community and do the training.
How long does training like that take?
It's a day long. And what we discovered was that there are, up until just recently, there were only 3 master trained QPR people in the state of Texas. So we took it upon ourselves to recruit one of our volunteers, and she went through the master training. So now we have one in our community here in North Texas.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Only 3 in the state?
Well, now there's 4.
Well, now there's now there is 4. You are absolutely correct. Is this a well-known form of training, or is this something else like Hope Squad where you heard about it, you found out about it and liked the results that you saw?
We like to use evidence-based curriculum, and this is the QPR is evidence-based.
Okay, you guys do a lot with research. Do I understand that correctly?
Oh, yes. Okay. So the research, along with our mission of providing suicide prevention training and education, there's another component of our mission that goes hand in hand with the services that we provide, and that is depression research funding. So our board every year votes on an unrestricted dollar amount. And currently right now we're providing research funding support to the UT Southwestern Center for Depression Research and Clinical Care. It's Dr. Trivedi. And he is doing some very interesting things with his group in terms of depression research. They have come up with some very unique assessment tools. They're also looking at biomarkers in a person's blood to better pinpoint an antidepressant. I don't know if you know anything about that, but a lot of times what happens is a doctor will say, here, try this. That might not work. It might make things worse for the patient. And this procedure better pinpoints a medication that'll work.
I love organizations that involve themselves with the science of their subject. Was this always a component of your organization? Were you guys always trying to do research like this?
In terms of providing funding support, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know you're not actually doing this. I don't see you with a lab coat on. But, you know, actually being a part of that, you know, to me, you guys are actually trying to get ahead of this problem. The organization itself focuses on dealing with it and preventing it. But you're talking about preventing it, at least from a research standpoint, from a very early stage, let's say. You're really trying to get ahead of it.
Well, I think what goes hand in hand with the programs that we have is actually doing something that will benefit people who suffer from depression, and that is the research aspect. You're right. We don't do the research, but we'd like to be able to provide some level of support to those who do.
Christina Judge is the executive director of the Jordan Elizabeth Harris Foundation. You can find them online at jordanharrisfoundation.org. I want to ask a little bit more about the QPR training. You guys have an event that happens, looks like once a month, mm-hmm. that I also want to talk to you about. You have one coming up on September 25th. Question. That's what the Q in QPR stands for. Explain that process to me. If you start off with the question, then you need to ask it a certain way. Would you, am I right saying that?
Absolutely. I think that our language is very important when we're dealing with somebody who might be struggling with thoughts of suicide. It's really very important for us to use language that's non-judgmental and to be forthright about it. If you know of somebody who's struggling or they've expressed it, I think it's very important to just come out and say, are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about hurting yourself? Are you thinking about killing yourself? And instead of something that might be more judgmental, something judgmental might be, you're not thinking about doing something crazy, are you? Because what happens is you're kind of discounting the way that person feels.
I never thought about it. That actually does sound like something most people would say, where you start talking about where I'm in a dark place, I'm not doing good, this, that, or the other. And then the person listening, I mean, it's not malicious or anything. You go, you're not thinking about doing something crazy, are you? Like, come on. That really sounds like a natural thing to say, and you're saying that that's, like, don't do that. That's not a good way to start this conversation.
But I think, Nick, that a lot of people are very scared, and they really don't know how to ask that important question because it's very scary for them. Oh, why don't you try going for a jog or do some yoga or, you know, maybe if you just, you know, try to replug or,
I need
you know,
to go
something.
To this training. Anytime I talk to them, I'm always like, get some more exercise. Have you thought about exercise? Change up the diet. How about more sleep? It sounds like I could use a little bit of QPR training. This isn't good.
I think everybody can benefit from it.
And that's probably the most important reason why you're here. This is something that not a lot of people really want to talk about, but it's what you guys do. It's why you're here.
Absolutely.
Persuade. Now, obviously, no one's going to encourage someone to hurt themselves. But what are we talking about when we say persuade after we've figured out the right questions to ask?
I think depending on the person that you're dealing with, you could be dealing with a loved one, you could be dealing with a coworker. I think it's very important to let that person know that I'm here for you, I care about you, and I'm listening. I want to help you. Will you allow me to help you?
Are people as receptive to this as they should be? Or is this one of those things where you really have to work on somebody before they will finally open up and really tell you what's going on? Because I can't think of really anything that would be a more deep conversation to have with someone. You can't really have this conversation with a stranger.
Well, we've actually had several people tell us that they've used QPR on strangers before.
Is that really the point of the training, that you can talk to anybody, whether they're a close friend or even a complete stranger? I have seen in the past that sometimes when people are, they're almost more free among strangers to an extent.
Yes, I agree with you.
So
yeah.
Is that kind of what this training is all about, where it could be for anyone in any situation?
I believe so.
And that's another thing that you guys really, really liked mm-hmm. about it. All right. So you have this, let's talk about QPR. You have them once a month. You have one on October 23rd, if you're looking far ahead in the calendar, but you also have one on September 25th. What do you guys do at this event?
Well, first of all, I need to give a shout out to our program coordinator, Christy Wiley. This is her brainchild.
Okay.
So the class is usually capped at about 25 or 30, and that's a manageable amount of people. The guests come in. and they get their tacos and they sit down, and it takes about an hour. So we go over all of the question, persuade, refer. There's a presentation, a short video that goes with it. So it's been very well received.
You're giving out tacos.
Yes.
I mean, what's not to love?
And we have to give a shout out to Los Vaqueros University.
Los Vaqueros.
Ensemble
those.
Co-working and Williams Financial Planning.
You got a lot of help. Who are most of the people that are coming to an event like this? Is it professionals that are looking to start implementing this? Is it people that are just interested in using it in their own lives? Who normally comes and gets tacos?
It's a really diverse group. Some people are wanting to test drive it if they think that their, you know, group that they're working with or coworkers or whatever. We have a hospital system. They're sending a couple people that are coming because they're thinking of using it for their hospital staff. Sometimes people will find out about it on our website or through Eventbrite. Also, when we're out in the community, it's just a very diverse, a lot of teachers, social workers, parents, teenagers. It's really a diverse group.
You know what? I just thought about this. You're talking about the diversity of the people that are using your services. I saw medical professionals and then also police. Is it common to have policemen or even maybe firemen come and learn these techniques? Is it becoming more popular?
Well, that leads me to another thing, and that is because we have a relationship with MedStar, and MedStar is getting ready, and they probably have started to implement it. They're doing a Hope Squad for first responders.
Really?
Right. Because when you stop and think of first responders, a lot of them are hesitant to reach out and get help because, of course, we talk about stigma again, and they may feel as though that might hamper their chances to continue providing emergency services, promotion amongst the ranks. They may be pulled off and given a desk job, what have you. So the nice thing about the Hope Squad for first responders is that it provides a safety net for them as well in terms of encouraging help seeking. So their peers are actually Hope Squad leaders and also first responders.
Which is another big thing when you're dealing with that arena, whether you're a veteran or a first responder, it's hard to talk to people that don't understand that lifestyle. So that must have been a great way for you guys to get in there and to help them and to keep this program going. Is this a new program?
It's a brand new program, and Desiree Partain with MedStar is responsible for starting it, and we provided some advisory some advice, but it's her baby.
Did she approach you guys about getting this into police departments? Is that how this started?
Yes, and she's the one. It was her idea, so we just helped with some advice, and it's taken off, and so we're really happy that that's happening.
That's exciting. What departments is it with?
Because it's just started, I'm not really sure where she is at the implementation stage.
Brand new.
It's brand new.
So, I mean, it's got to make you feel good when people just start approaching you wanting to use the techniques of your organization. You're just getting phone calls from people saying that they want to be a part of this. It's got to feel good.
It is. And Ellen and I have been working together on an ambassador program. I think doing the QPR certification and then going out and providing the training is not for everybody. It's not. It takes a special kind of person to provide that training because it can be very emotional. People in the audience will ask questions. They have a story to share. So with the ambassador program, that allows us to be able to use volunteers to go out and provide outreach efforts.
If you want to be a volunteer with this organization, what's the best way for people to do that?
We have a general info contact on our website, and that's the best way to do it.
All right, you guys do have a big event coming up, the 5th annual luncheon. It's over at the Will Rogers Coliseum. You guys are calling it Bring the Conversation to Light. What do you guys have going on over there?
Well, this is the 5th annual luncheon, and we have about 1,000 guests. It's at the Will Rogers Roundup Room. The lunch is free. It's a very simple concept, box lunch and a bottle of water. We try to get you in and out in an hour. A lot of people are there on their lunch hour. And generally, we have a keynote speaker. This keynote speaker this year is Dr. Jennifer Wright Berryman. She's a nationally recognized suicidologist. She just put out a TED Talk, so you can Google that and look it up. And her message this year will be one of hope.
Once again, the 5th annual luncheon for the Jordan Elizabeth Harris Foundation happening on November 14th from noon to 1 p.m. at the Will Rogers Coliseum. If you want more details, you can find them online at jordanharrisfoundation.org. Christina Judge, executive director of this organization, was my guest. It was great speaking with you. I really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, Nick.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.